Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast. I'm Spanners, the host and producer of Missed Apex Podcast. Did you guys miss me? I finished editing the last show less than 12 hours ago. We had a feisty debate about our top five all-time greats, so make sure you check that out. I'm joined, though, by genuine F1 media legend, Joe Chop Chop Saywood. How's it going, Joe? No, you're not on mute. I've unmuted you.
Oh, okay. It was worth a try. I thought I'd just wind you up a bit. Okay, no, I'm fine, apart from being ill as a dog, yes. Oh, see, I went to Mexico last week and drank the water, so I'm not entirely healthy, but there you are.
The less details about that, the better. Joe, I saw you, though, promoting your...
Actually, I know I have to challenge that, because the water was worse. In Austin, we had orders in Austin not to drink the water. Because really? There'd been all kinds of problems there. Mexico was apparently fine. So it was kind of bizarre. It was all back to front. Oh, well, it was fine until I drank some, of course, but that's another story.
I feel terrible for you. I saw you on Sky TV, Joe, promoting your book, Fascinating F1 Facts. But once again, they cut out the bit where you promoted Missed Apex Podcast. Those gits.
What can I say? I mean, you know, clearly there's a conspiracy against you.
they're scared of us. They see us
coming. You know what? Somebody, I can't remember who it was now. I think it was probably Oscar Wilde said when someone complained about a conspiracy of silence against him. You know what he said?
Go on.
Join it.
Oh, come on, Joe. You got to spread the fame of Missed Apex.
I see. Fame. The price of what is fame nowadays? What is celebrity? You just have to have a YouTube. I need to play a game and film myself doing it, and then I'll become a YouTube legend. Right. The only thing is they don't play computer games.
Are you feeling in any way angry about Formula E's new YouTube policy then, Joe?
No, not at all. It's the fastest way I know to buy people to watch your telly show. You just rent somebody who's got 19 million followers and hope that half of them will go and watch your racing. So even if the bloke knows absolutely nothing about motor racing, perfectly reasonable to have your lead commentator as a complete... Actually, let's not go down there because I might say something stupid.
Well, I tell you what, having daytime Joe makes a big difference because I don't think evening Joe would have censored himself there. In France, though, isn't it legal after 1 p.m? You have to have a drink.
What?
I thought in France you have to drink wine.
I've broken the law quickly and was going to get one. No, I don't think it's entirely legal. Illegal, whatever. No, I haven't had a drink yet. And probably it will be a while before I do. But there you are.
So let's explain to people what is going on with the Formula E broadcasting that's clearly triggered you. They are going exclusive on YouTube and they're using... Are they using YouTube personalities? They're not doing the commentary, are they? They're just doing like the pre-show and the post-show.
Well, I think they are. I don't know. I mean, I read commentary, so there are two of them. One of them apparently does it quite often, but the other one is just sort of some bloke who is famous for filming himself playing FIFA, some game or other by Sony, and then talking about it and then doing little tricks with it and then having a boxing match.
Oh.
And he's got 90, well, white collar boxing apparently, which I don't know what that means, but it's something to do with people who've never boxed before hitting each other. And he get 19 million people followed him. Now, I can't work out why 19 million people would want to watch an incompetent amateur boxer hitting somebody who is an incompetent amateur boxer. But there you go. Maybe we should have a punch up. You know, maybe we should, or we also have to be a DJ, do a bit of rap. Eat sandwiches on telly. Who knows what you have to do? But I find the whole thing completely crazy. I don't understand modern celebrity at all. I think we're celebs, you know, but I just need loads of money, you know.
Well, Joe, we've just had a Twitter come in from a at Spanners Ready who says, if you could have a white collar boxing match against any other F1 media personality, who would it be?
I'm not a very violent type. Despite my reactionary reputation, you know, I'm not really a violent type. I don't, you know, I don't really want to punch people. I did once punch a marshal somewhere in France. Or is it? Yes, it was a marshal. Yes. And I punched somebody once when I was very young, when somebody stabbed me. I think it's perfectly reasonable to punch them. But generally speaking, I don't really punch people. I just sort of look at them and then destroy them with words, you know, later on.
So Ted.
No. Ted's like me. He's a very gentle soul, you know.
I bet he is. Why don't we talk some F1?
I thought we were. Isn't Teddy in F1? Or has he left?
Well, that was my weird segue. There's a lot of people who have left and a lot of people who haven't left because that's fake news. But let's start off by talking about a Rich Energy because they were seen...
Well, they've arrived, well, apparently. Yeah.
They were seen walking around with Claire Williams. So everyone was... The story was it would be Williams. But, I mean, who are Rich Energy to start with? Is this like another Monster energy drink? But I never see Rich Energy anywhere. Except in this context.
Well, you see Monster Energy, don't you, in the shops? And you see Red Bull in the shops, and you see a number of others. Well, the answer is I've yet to find anybody who's seen Rich Energy in the shops. And, you know, who knows? But their accounts, which you can see if you look in Companies House, are not awfully impressive. And yet they've been wandering around sort of trying to buy Formula One teams, as in the summer. Force India, the judge in that particular... In the case of the administration, said no, your bid makes no sense at all. I'm not doing it.
Right.
And yet they turned up, so they must have some money. If Williams have let them through the door, they must have had some vague hint of money. I'm not sure it helps to be, you know, to have your front man looking like ZZ Top, who doesn't really fit into the world of Formula One, but that's his own personal choice, you know. And if he wants to be, I think he should bring a guitar along, to be quite honest, and then people would mistake him for ZZ Top and ask for autographs, probably. But
what's his name, Joe?
Story. William Story, with an E in the middle, as opposed to a story, so it can't be accused of being fake news. It's a number of landings, I suppose. Whatever. He was wandering around with Claire on the grid in Austin, and the following week, he had 4 days later, actually, he'd signed a deal with Haas. I think it's fairly simple to explain it. Haas offered him considerably more space for the same amount of money, or half the money, or whatever it was. Anyway, there's obviously some reason that Rich Energy went, ooh, well, we like that, we'll have that.
Wow, that is some beard he's got. I've just Googled it. And on the Google image search, he is pictured with just about everyone in F1. He's there next to Nico Rosberg, Claire Williams, Robert Kubica, Bob Fernley. Just, wow, like he is...
That's
fully...
three people who aren't in F1 anymore.
Oh, right, there we go. Well, okay.
Claire Williams is still there, but otherwise, no, everyone else is gone. Nico Rosberg is desperately clinging on, trying to become a YouTube celebrity or something, but he's not in F1 anymore.
No.
Well, he is occasionally turning up doing TV commentary in 37 different languages, you know.
So what will this mean for Haas F1? Does it mean they will turn up in black and gold next year? Will it mean they've got more development, less freedom? How does it affect their Ferrari relationship?
I don't think it affects anything, really. It's just a pile of money. As to how big the pile is another question. I think the answer as to how big the pile is to what colour the car will be. And, you know, I would see it's logical to have it black and gold. There's no reason to have Haas in Haas colours anymore. He's done his 3 years of promoting Haas machinery. So I suppose you can afford to sell the car cheap. As to what it's all about, I really don't know. I know that behind it all, Mr. Story keeps talking about billionaires who are supporting him. And I think we've identified a number of those, one of whom may be Bernie Ecclestone, but let's not go there. There's a man called Mr. David Sullivan, and there's another called David Gold, and David Sullivan and David Gold go back a long way to the days of Ann Summers sex shops and grubby photographs and things like that. They then bought the Sunday Sport or the Daily Sport and made a load of money. Actually, it was fake news. They sort of they didn't invent fake news. It was copied from the Americans, inevitably. There was a newspaper in Florida called Weekly World News, which had wonderful headlines like "Cannibal Tribe Doomed After Eating AIDS Victim" and stories like that.
Oh, how did that? What happened? Are they okay? Well,
I don't know, but that was a very long time ago. I think the Daily Sport, became most famous for World War II bomber found in space. I think was their major headline. Anyway, they had a picture of a B-25 maybe flying around in space, which was, you know, it was obviously a bit daft, but anyway, that made them a fortune. It's one of these ridiculous things where people make fortunes by doing daft things, but there you are. And they then bought football teams, and they were, I think it was Birmingham City or Manchester, I can't remember. It wasn't Manchester United, I know that, but they owned a football team. I think it was Birmingham. Now they own West Ham United, so I think they're the money behind it. But if there's a drink behind the money, it would be interesting to find out. I'm sure there's a plan to have a drink at some point. But, you know, normally when you start making a product, you need a distribution network before you tell the world it's all there. Because otherwise, when you've told everybody, here's our product, and then you can't get it. So logically, you should have the distribution network and the product first. But there you are. Good for them. Then maybe, you know, maybe if you grow a long beard, you can have stranger business views which are more successful than mine. Fair enough.
I can't grow a beard. That makes me sad.
Well, nor can I much, but there you go, scrabbly old thing here.
Joe, you were talking about fake news, and that leads us fantastically into Ferrari in general, but more specifically, Arribavene said that it is fake news now, and fake news puts you in a particular bracket, but we won't go into that. Fake news that Binotto is to leave Ferrari. He says his enemies are destabilizing Ferrari. What's going on?
Whose enemies?
Ferrari's enemies, I assume.
Let's put it, there are two things here. Let's separate the two. Fake news is a Trumpian thing, and fake news is designed deliberately to undermine the media. And sadly, a lot of people are believing it. It obviously hasn't helped some of the behavior of some of the media, but it's not anything like as bad. And, you know, Trump is a very dangerous man, and we need to make sure that people understand that, and we have to tell the truth about him as much as possible. And there we are. So fake news is one thing. As to about rumors of Ferrari, well, Ferrari have always surrounded by rumors because there's an Italian press corps that have got to write things every day about the same team. And if you've ever tried to write something the same every day about the same team, it gets pretty hard to do. Like, you know, nobody really gives a toss if the third aerodynamicist on the left bought a Mars bar on Tuesday. You know, that's not news, is it? But they have to do...
if it's a Freddo bar, it's news, isn't it?
Well, apparently so, yes. They have to, they have to find things to write about. So I've certainly heard a couple of whispers, but, you know, they may come from... Ultimately, you've got to trace all these things back to the source of the whispers. So, you know, if a rival team principal says that... there's some rumors going around about Binotto. Is that because somebody has rung him up and said, do you want to hire Binotto? Or is it because Binotto's rung up and said, I want to hire, you know, do you want to hire me? Or is it because he's read it in the Italian newspapers? We don't know.
So more comments from Arribavene, though, did hint about reinforcements. Now, there's a common sort of corporate tactic when somebody's not doing well or you want to kind of replace them without sacking them. You bring someone in over the top of them and you go, no, you're not being demoted. We've just identified a new position. And then someone does some of your job and you report to them now. Could it be a case of that where they're bringing in people like an umbrella manager?
I don't think so. If you analyze, first of all, let's analyze why it went wrong this year for Ferrari. And that's really very simple.
Oh, good.
And it's one word, really. It's Sebastian is the word. And whether his fans out there like it or not, he made so many mistakes. Now, was the car always as good as the Mercedes? Actually, from about sort of in Spa, everyone thought, oh no, Ferrari is just going to walk the championship. And then next week, suddenly, even though the Ferrari looked quicker around Monza, Lewis managed to win. So, and Sebastian threw it away. So, you know, you've got to It was a very, very close championship between two very good cars. Okay, so you can't really knock Ferrari for having produced a good car. They've done a remarkable job to close the gap to Mercedes. Now, there were lots of rumors along the way, as there always are about everything. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that they had their car checked over. They did everything they needed to do. And they were competitive. And the FIA said nothing wrong with this. Of course, you then go into the conspiracy theorists who reckon that the FIA is in Ferrari's pocket and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that they're probably not, because it's quite hard to do that these days. And so then you look at it and say, well, where did it go wrong? And you have to put the blame pretty fairly, squarely rather, in the front garden of Mr. S. Vettel.
Kevin in the chat room says
Switzerland Limited.
Kevin in the chat room says, "Oh no, Joe throws Seb under the bus." I have, interestingly, no strong opinion one way or the other about Sebastian Vettel's performance.
I didn't say I had a strong opinion. I'm just telling you what I think happened. You know, the fact is, whether I have a strong opinion about it or not, the fact is that Sebastian Vettel makes mistakes under pressure, and this year he made a lot. And he knows it. You could hear him after Mexico. He admitted that he'd had a lot to do with them not being very successful. But, you know, everybody, as Lewis said, everybody at this level makes mistakes. And we've seen a few mistakes from Mercedes as well. It's just that at the end of the day, Ferrari made more mistakes than Mercedes did. And also, let's not forget that Lewis Hamilton is driving on another plane, another planet, to everybody else.
If you do bow shooting competitions, you know, bow and arrowing, don't know what that's called, the aim of the game is...
Archery, I
think. Is it? All right, there you go. I've got some good archery stories. The aim is to put it into the red bit in the middle, right? And everything that isn't in the red bit is a mistake. So, you know, making mistakes is an inherent part of the sport. So it is about making less mistakes and performing as well as possible. So, yeah, I think Sebastian Vettel's kind of... he's been too criticized to say, oh, he's just thrown it away. He just hasn't done as well as the people who've won this year.
No, he has made too many mistakes. And if you're paid the amount of money that he's paid, you're not expected to make mistakes. You're expected to be perfect. And that is the truth of it. So, you know, how does that equate in the long term? If he has a season like he had this year, next year, it could be quite interesting, couldn't it? Because I think Mr. Leclerc...
it's interesting that, yeah.
When he arrives, is going to be... he's not going to hang around and sort of sit around and be Mr. Nice Guy. He's just going to go after him, because that's what you do as a young driver.
I heard Sebastian Vettel somewhere, or I read somewhere, that he said that he expected Leclerc to stick to the rules. He said, me and Leclerc will need to work together. The rules are clear, and it was the same with Kimi. What does he mean? Does he mean he's expecting, or is he making a play to have Leclerc as his number two driver?
That's basically, he's sort of saying, the rules are, as far as I can understand it, at the moment at Ferrari, I don't think there's anything contractual, and there has been in the past, where there have been contractual clauses where the drivers have been sufficiently insecure to need to be seen as the number one. I think at Ferrari, the guy who emerges as the number one is the number one. It's as simple as that. And if there is a point at which you have to make a decision based on the tactics that are required to win championships, you get situations like we had in Russia, where nobody at Mercedes wanted Lewis to pass Valtteri, and Valtteri certainly didn't want it, and Lewis didn't want it. And it happened because it had to happen, because, you know, it's easy to be, I think it was Toto said, you know, I'll be the villain today and rather being the idiot in a few weeks' time. You've got to do stuff like that occasionally, not all the time. Jean Todt always used to do it far too much. He used to control things far too much. And that's why he ran into a lot of opposition and people who didn't like the way he did things. Because as far as he was concerned, it was just all about Michael, and anyone else in the second car can just sort of get lost, really.
Now, what would happen next season if Ferrari turn up in the slightly better car and they're getting the results and poles and things, but come Barcelona, Leclerc is settled in and pulls a little championship lead? Can we envisage a situation where Ferrari would ask Vettel to support Leclerc's title thing, or does Vettel have an
they might ask him to support Leclerc? I'm not sure about this Leclerc bloke, whoever he is. He's called Leclerc. I'm sorry that if in English it doesn't work out like that, but if we start doing things like that, we'll end up with some Hamiltons and all kinds of funny things, you know. So let's just call him by his name. His name is Leclerc.
I'm sure he had a video saying that it was Leclerc. If I can find it, will you give me...
The C is silent, as in something I can't think of, but I'm sure there's something with a silent C in it. So there you are. the answer to your question is, I think if Leclerc is leading the championship by halfway, perhaps not Barcelona, it's a little early in the day because you can have good luck, bad luck. But if he looks like he's the number one, he will become the number one. And Arriva Bene and co. would be absolute morons if they didn't do that. You know, it's just, you know, and I don't think they are morons. You know, I think they come across badly because, you know, Arriva Bene's English is not very good, but, you know, not everybody in the world speaks English. So, you know, I think that Arriva Bene is much maligned, and I think he's actually a much, he doesn't come across on TV. He doesn't look like a sort of nice bloke. He looks like someone who'd murder your kittens, doesn't he? But, you know, the fact is, I don't think he's like that at all.
Oh God!
He's quite a nice man, and he's quite cultured, you know.
So. Wow, right.
But he does look a bit sort of, you know, sinister. He looks Heathcliff, doesn't he? Heathcliff.
Yeah, I'm not going to answer my emails for a while.
Okay, that's fine.
Can I talk about Binotto though? Because some people might not be familiar. He's kind of been credited with turning the team around after 2016. So he's been in charge of like the technical aspect of the car since 2016. Been given a lot of freedom to do some blue sky thinking. Clearly, he's had a good effect because they've been much more competitive.
He seems to be a very good engineering manager, which is what you need nowadays. You need to have engineering managers as opposed to, you know, it's a bit like describing Ross Brawn as being this this bloke who was in the wind tunnel and found these extra bits. That's not what he did. He found people who found extra bits, you know. That's how you do it. Except in the case of Adrian Newey, who still comes in, gets his drawing board out, quite literally gets his drawing board out, draws something, and everybody makes it, and blimey, it goes faster. You know, he is really the exception to the rule, but everyone else are really engineering managers these days. And you have to have somebody who understands, and this is the key, I think, to success in Formula One. Your technical director has to understand aerodynamics, because otherwise the aerodynamicist will pull the wool over his eyes. Because aerodynamicists always have great stories about what's going on, but the reality is that sometimes it's just a load of old waffle. And this is where, if you understand the waffling and you understand what they're doing wrong, then you can say to them, no, this is not correct. But otherwise it's this mysterious black art, a bit like tires, to be honest, you know. Very few people really understand what's going on with tyres. I haven't a clue what's going on with tyres, I should add. You know, black round rubber things that grip the road or not.
Are you saying you don't listen to Missed Apex F1 Tech Time with Matthew Summerfield?
Summerfield is a tyre technician these days, is he?
Well, I don't know. He plays one on the internet.
Okay, very good. I don't know.
He says he understands what's going on with the tyres. Right, Summers, you're lying to me.
I didn't say that.
Joe Saywood calls out Summers.
I don't understand. I understand they grip the road or not, but as to why they grip the road and the temperatures, all the rest, it's just, you know, and if you talk to tyre people, they're quite funny because they'll put all kinds of things in tyres thinking they'll make a difference, you know, all the mixtures they have and all this sort of stuff. But nowadays it's a little bit different because they're trying to make tyres that don't work. Which is kind of bizarre and back to front. In the old days, when you have a tyre war, you're usually trying to make the best possible tyre. These days, they're trying to make the tyres that will go off at different times. But basically, they're designing for failure, which is an interesting idea.
Say hello to the chat room, the people who joined us for this lunchtime episode. Somebody says, I'm not using my mug. That's a socialist. That's because not enough people went to MissedApexPodcast.com and bought mugs. So now I can't afford to use that mug anymore. That doesn't make any sense, but go check out our mugs. John Palmer, Sebastian Vettel will leave and sulk if he doesn't beat Leclerc. And considering the bad place Vettel is in, I have no doubt the team will favour Leclerc if he gets the upper hand. It's certainly going to be very, very interesting at Ferrari next season. I found it very interesting what you were saying there about the difference between the kind of Steve Jobs type figure with this vision, such as Adrian Newey doing his engineering and then people going and manufacturing that. That is quite a very top-down approach. I would imagine that firms such as Mercedes, and I say firm because they operate more like an engineering company, it seems from the outside, will have a bunch of people who will identify areas of weakness, and then they will just task a team of engineers, find me performance in this section here, find me performance here without interfering with that. And then you'll get a bunch of people who only see the very narrow part of the car they're working on.
Well, one of the things that was really interesting in recent weeks since we had the last podcast was in Austin, there was I don't really know how to describe it. It was a business conference, really, with MIT and Formula One getting together and discussing how to improve your business. Now, in the course of this, there was a question about innovation. And the MIT professors were absolutely brilliant on the subject of innovation, how it happens, what stops it. And one of the things you have to do to innovate is to have everyone talking to one another and not what they call the bunker mentality. Now, getting everyone together inevitably results in conflict because they all think, you know, the mechanical designers think the aerodynamicists are a beep, you know, and it's a bit like Royal Air Force with Bomber Command, Fighter Command and Coastal Command. You know, everyone knows who the flyboy heroes are, but the other blokes do an important job as well, you see. So they all have a fight if they get together. And what you have to do is you have to have conflict. What are you doing, practicing for me on YouTube, I guess?
No one can see that, Joe. You're letting them behind the curtain. Yes, I was demonstrating my fighty pose.
Right, very good. Well, just declare war on somebody and you'll get 19 million followers straight away. Anyway, moving swiftly on from that, basically, if you get positive conflict, in other words, they start listening to each other and produce a better result, then you have innovation that's possible because you're opening the minds of the different bunkers to mix with one another. And that was really interesting stuff. Anyway, there you are. That was all part of Formula One too.
Good. Let's all go to Twitter, where we ask people to ask you things. So they got in touch with us at MissedApexF1, and Joe is at Joe Sayward, and I'm at Spanners Ready, if anybody were to care. Rosie says, what is more important to win for an F1 team, the Drivers' Championship or the Constructors' Championship? But my little tilt on that would be, I think it's the Drivers' Championship. But given that that is settled now, how much will Ferrari take comfort if they do manage to win the Constructors' Championship?
It's got nothing to do with comfort. It's to do with money.
Cash.
Okay. The Drivers' Championship is the fighter command. They are the guys, the fly boys, you know, the fly halves in rugby, the pretty boys who win the races and all the rest of this, shoot down the bad guys, etc. So they're the heroes and they get all the glory, and that's what the TV follows. Now, in terms of the team, the Constructors' Championship's way more important because they get paid as to the position they finish in the championship. And one position change can be worth a great deal of money. So like 10 million, for example. So, you know, you can have a point at the end of the season. If somebody scores a point, you'll see teams going absolutely berserk sometimes. And you think, what on earth's all that about? Over 1 point. But the fact is that 1 point might be worth 10 million. So, and 10 million is quite a lot of money.
It's loads.
Particularly in the days when there are no sponsors left, apart from people with beards, of course.
Joe, can I ask you things of a personal nature?
You can try.
I will then.
I might be grumpy and reactionary, you know.
You've talked over my bumper, Joe.
Well, I didn't know it was coming, did I?
Right, well, the video people will see that absolute car crash, but the audio people will hear a nice slick bumper now. Joe, we've had Darren Johnson at Daz the Gardener on Twitter ask, does Joe expect to do a live event in the UK at the end of the season this year? Of course, he's talking about your Audiences with Joe Sayward, where we all gather in a room and they install a tree and we all gather around that tree, sipping lemonade, listening to stories from Uncle Joe.
Something like that, yes. Yeah, I am hoping to, but I'm having some trouble actually communicating with the venue at the moment. So hopefully it will be sorted out shortly, maybe this afternoon if I'm able to. I do intend to do one. I hope to do one on the Friday, the first Friday of December. That's the plan. Whether it can happen, I don't know. It really is dependent on venue. So
London.
In principle, yes. In reality, we'll see.
So London, though, if it happens.
London, yes. London.
All right, cool. Cool. Can I come?
No.
You'll get me in. Mates rates, oh, come on.
I'll charge you. Yeah. Yeah, you can come along, I suppose. Woo. Bring your microphone with you, you know.
let's do that. Joe, you were plugging on Sky, of course, this book here on the video, which is Fascinating F1 Facts. It's not just one, though, is it?
It's two.
There's two. The other one's just got a two on it. That's the only difference. There you go. Volume two. What's all that about, then? This is bathroom reading, isn't it? When you want to read something over 2 minutes.
Bathroom reading.
Well, I think so.
Some kind of Midwest... Mid-Atlantic. No, it's a Lou reading. What's wrong with you, man?
Porcelain in Porcelain Palace Entertainment. That's
no,
what
it's
is.
Not. It's a coffee table book. It's a book you delve into for 5 minutes at a go, and you go, wow, that's amazing. You know, and there's stories, there are hundreds of stories of wild and ridiculous things that have happened in the history of Grand Prix racing and Formula One, and they're all in the book. So, and the glorious thing is that there'll be another Fascinating Facts volume coming this winter, because there's tons and tons of fascinating facts that haven't been revealed yet. And I'm looking forward to doing it.
That's fascinating. Thank you very much. Follow Joe basically by searching Joe Sayward F1 and you will find all his stuff. In telling Joe to shush for that bumper, I ended up hitting my own mic. Right, this is a disaster. This is what happens.
I thought a bumper was a thing on the front of a car that you ran into other people with. We could call it a bumper. Is now music, is it? I'm not cool enough to know these things.
We could call it a sting, couldn't we? It's all very radio, Joe. Do try to keep up.
Is that sick or what?
That was about 10 years ago. Yeah, that was 10 years ago.
Well, okay, I'm sorry, but the YouTube hero, he was talking about sick the other day, and I thought, oh, poor fellow. Apparently, he meant it was really good. So there you are. So,
oh, dear, we are sounding very old. On Twitter.
No, I'm not. I'm not in reactionary at all. I'm all for it.
I said you sound old.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, great.
Yeah, it was that. So you misinterpreted the insult. It was a different insult. That's all. Shall we talk? Oh, okay. Shall we address more questions from Twitter? Because Ferris at FDO Alonso asks that Lawrence Stroll seems to be more involved in the team meetings. Is he more interested in the business side than the success of his son? And Christopher Fonseca asks, why on earth haven't Force India announced Stroll yet?
I would say they haven't announced Stroll yet as a courtesy to Ocon. That would be, in fact, that's the answer. I asked Mr. Stroll exactly that question. Ah. That's the answer he gave me. So as to whether he's interested, he's obviously interested in his son, and he's obviously interested in it as a business enterprise. Which is more important to him? I can't answer that one. That's something that only Lawrence Stroll can answer. And I have a vague suspicion if you asked him the question, he probably would find a way of dodging it. So because it's a really hard question to ask, because if you answer it either which way, you're going to get criticized, aren't you? So this is one of the things about when people overanalyze. And what happens a lot nowadays in the Formula One media is that you see it on the sort of Wednesday after a Grand Prix, all the people who haven't got a clue what they're writing about are going over all the transcripts, endlessly looking for things to misconstrue and change and twist around to get a new story. So I basically just don't even bother to read the internet news on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, because all it is rehashes what's happened at the weekend, because nobody's got anything new, because the people who are writing about it weren't there and don't know what they're talking about. Anyway, moving swiftly on from that, I'm sure I've upset loads of people, but good.
I was wondering whether Daytime Joe would be any less angry or controversial than Nighttime Joe.
Not angry. I have opinions, and I'm allowed to verse them, apparently, because it's a podcasty thing.
Okay, well, email.
Anyway, I want 19 million followers, so, what do I have to do? Punching?
Yeah, let's do Right, well, there we go. We found our celebrity match.
Arm hurts. I've got a note from the doctor, this kind of thing.
Oh, let's fake a good Twitter feud. I tried to get a Twitter feud going with Jack Nicholls, but he's too nice. That's the problem. I need to pick on someone else.
Yeah, true. Well, there's a ready feud out there. There's one journalist, there's one bloke out there who writes about Formula One, who'll readily have a fight any day of the week. You just have to mention the word or something, and that's it. Oh, did I say something wrong? Sorry. Mark the time.
Yeah, I will. Beep. Yeah. That's okay. I don't think you need to name names, because I think we've all seen, I think, recently. So that's
there was a very interesting survey I saw somebody thingamabobbed the other day about who's the best journalist in Formula One, which of course is going to get the answer you wanted to have.
Yes.
And I noticed that said person got 0%, which was just a tad on the amusing side, but far bit for me to say that out loud. But I was, I wasn't high enough up the list for my taste. But yeah, it's only because, if you're obviously, people will vote for people they've heard of. And if you only watch television or something, you're bound to sort of, vote for the ones who have the biggest sight. So it's a sort of self-defeating prophecy, if you like. It's all these surveys are daft, aren't they? It's like, let's ask Formula One how we should change. Well, the answer is not to ask the fans. They're not the ones. If you want it to change, you have to go and ask the people in the supermarkets who don't watch it and say, why don't you watch it?
Joe, are you saying there's a problem with just leaving important decisions down to just a mass poll of the general population?
No, not the general population, but that's not. If you do a survey on a motorsport website saying, how can we improve Formula One and get more people in? You're going to get the answer from the people you've already got, not from the people who aren't doing it. So you have to ask. And that's what Formula One Group is doing at the moment. They're going out and asking people who don't watch it why you don't watch it, which is the right way to do it. And that's why I think, you know, we're seeing the results of that research. They're getting back in and they have identified a hard core of fans, who are the people who usually do the surveys. And they've identified people who have a strong interest, but not really are hardcore fans. And they're just basically just trying to push these groups closer to the middle, if you like, and make them a little bit more fanish as they go. And if you can move 5 million people and 5 million people put their hand in their pocket for $200 a year, the numbers go up, don't they?
I think I knew a girl from Fanish once. Very nice place this time of year.
Is that near the village of Wedlock? Did she live outside of Wedlock? Anyway, moving swiftly on. Oh, sorry, that's a regional accent. Not allowed to do them, I remember now, yes.
josayward@gmail.com for all your complaints. Actually, we say that all the time. That's not actually an email address. So
I do wonder if people have been... just going to junk rubbish.
You are...
And don't give out my real one because I can't be bothered with it all. Yes.
You are welcome to email me, spannersready@gmail.com, however. And we do read the YouTube comments. Sometimes I give myself a day to rest and relax before tackling them. But we always read the comments on the website as well, missedapexpodcast.com. Thank you so much for your interactions. The second part of that question, though, was what will or should Ocon do in 2019? We're assuming he's not going to be in F1. He's not going to have an F1 drive. What should he do with his time?
Who is assuming?
I am.
I'm assuming that he will be in F1.
Get out of it. Come on then. Tell me.
He's going to be driving the Williams if they can make it work. It's as simple as that. I mean, you would not leave a man of his talent sitting around playing tiddlywinks for a whole year. It's ridiculous. So, you know, and even on simulators, it's not a good place to be. So Mercedes are pushing very hard to get him in at Williams. Williams obviously want to have a decent driver. They've got George Russell. To have the two of them together would be terrific. They'd have a driving lineup that would motivate the workforce, which incidentally is a key part of being in Formula One, having a motivated workforce. If you have two pair drivers, your workforce is not so motivated. So they need to find the money to put Ocon in. There is a gap on the money, depending on who you talk to. You can read all kinds of daft numbers on the internet, but I would say that the gap is probably about 10 million, which
really?
Is a lot. Dollars. Maybe less, but they need to find that much money to put Ocon in the car. And if not, they'll choose somebody else and it won't be as good.
Knowing a little about engineering costs as I do, I'm wondering if they didn't spend 10 million just with all the messing around with their wheel hubs. Surely 10 million to Mercedes, is it the principle of that value? I mean, they could go and search down the sofa cushions for 10 million if they really wanted Ocon in.
No, I think they've already spent quite a lot, you know, so... Toto said to me not long ago, he said, yeah, we do actually have budgets we're supposed to stick to. And let's face it, Toto is a shareholder in the team, so it's in his interest to make sure that the budgets actually match up. So he doesn't have to pay out all his own money. So, you know, there is a limit to how much they will pay. Now, you can... There's also lots of complications. You can't just, for example, go to a Mercedes supplier and say, here, give us some money, because that's against the law in some countries nowadays. You know, it's amazing how complicated these laws are today in terms of persuading your suppliers to do things that's deemed to be corrupt in some places. So, you know, one has to be very careful about how you do it. But, you know, I think they'll probably find the money from somewhere.
Nigel Spears in our live chat room says Ocon will end up at Williams. The team is playing hardball, which is fair enough. I'm going to look in Joe's eyes now because I think you were being coy. What have you heard, Joe? Oh, you're on that camera. Joe, what have you heard? Come on. What is your percentage for?
What have I heard?
Yeah.
I've heard exactly what I've told you, which is that they're trying to find the money. And finding the money is not easy, particularly if you're last in the world championship. So basically, they're relying on people coming along because it's Ocon, or because there's some connection that makes sense. You know, a lot of the sponsorship nowadays is not about eyeballs, because, you know, they just don't pay off like they used to. It's about B2B. There's all kinds of stuff. I mean, the Coca-Cola deal with McLaren, for example. Now, I don't know the actual details of it. It might be a massive deal, just a little bit on the car. It might be that every Hilton hotel in the world has agreed to put Coca-Cola into the fridge. I would have thought they were there already, you know. But it may be deals like that. You know, there was a deal a few years ago where LG, who was a sponsor of McLaren, was going to put TVs into all the Hilton hotels in the world. You know, that's a massive deal. And if a sponsorship comes off the back of a B2B thing like that, that can be very helpful. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that people are looking at nowadays. So you get the sponsors so that the sponsors work together and make money, as when the Formula One is basically the icing on the cake.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
That's good. Well, sometimes, Joe...
I was going to say you're speechless for a minute.
Sometimes I think you finish the sentence and then I start talking and then you start talking and then everybody yells at me for cutting off the eminent and talismanic Joe Saywood, you see.
So talismanic.
I prefer
the second bit. Talis, I'm not so sure, but manic, maybe. Anyway, yes, another question. Is there another question?
Yeah, of course there is. It's limitless. You're a very popular boy, Joe. That's why we have you on here. Can you imagine being a podcast and dropping Joe Saywood from your episode list? What idiots.
Oh, that's a terrible thing to say.
I thought I'd just join in. Here we go. Sandra on Twitter, at Sandra24Jan. Says, what next for Smedley? If F1, where, or Formula E? Rob Smedley, I've just heard that over message today, actually. He's leaving Williams.
Well, if you'd read my newsletter, you would have read it 2 weeks ago.
I can't afford that, Joe. That's for the big shots.
I've had that one. That was in the Austin edition. So that's 3 weeks ago, I actually wrote that story. Yeah, Smedley's decided he wants to stop. Traveling. He's been traveling for 17 years or something. I kind of get it. Have a bit of time doing his own thing. I'm sure he's made plenty of money over the years. And then I think he'll decide afterwards what he wants to do, you know. But there are things that some people in Formula One never think about, like real life. Some people, like Rob, I think, have a view that real life is quite important. So I kind of agree with it, but I'm sort of an addict. I can't be weaned off it. You know, I have to have my injection every week of Formula One.
Is your wife just mean? Because my wife is mean. I would stay on the road as well. So
no, my wife's very lovely.
I'm sure she is.
And she likes to see me come home occasionally. But it's very nice.
I know a lot of people who were in married couples in the forces, for example, and when the husband or wife actually did spend a lot of time at home after retiring, suddenly they were just like, you're in the way. This is my house.
Yeah, or really, did I marry this person? I understand that. Yeah, it is a common thing. But, you know, I think that if you spend, put it this way, being married and being involved in Formula One, you're sort of away half the time. So you're only sort of married for half the time. So, you know, the 7-year itch comes after 14 years, apparently, you know. So I don't know. We'll have to see, won't we? But that's just it's an occupational necessity to do what we do. Now, I don't know where the limit is. I think there's a lot of people sort of saying we're pretty near the limit. And there is a sort of a swirl of people saying less is more. Perhaps we should go back to fewer races and make more money off the fewer races. But it's quite hard to do that as well. So Yeah, I don't know if 23, 24 races is really very sensible. At a time when attention spans are getting smaller and races are getting shorter, it's really interesting with e-racing, I noticed the other day.
Wait a minute, what do you mean by e-racing?
E-racing, not that electric rubbish. I'm talking about e-racing.
Virtual racing.
Which is virtual racing, which is called e-sports, I'm told. Right. And I became an expert in this recently by deciding I better go and find out what this is all about, all these virtual chaps doing their thing. And I sort of looked into it, and it is quite interesting. And motor racing is particularly interesting because it is the only sport in which the players in the real world and the virtual world do exactly the same thing. Think about that for a minute. Football, you play it with your hands on an e-sport game, don't you?
Right.
You don't kick balls around. All the other games, I don't know what they all are. I mean, there are loads of them that seem to involve machine gunning one another a lot.
Yeah.
Those sort of games. But you're actually the only one where you're doing exactly the same thing is Formula One. You're sitting in a chair and you're driving around. Now, the difference is, of course, you're not crashing into things, and you're not going awfully fast. But there is nonetheless, you know, it's got the same motor skills. It's got the same hand-to-eye coordination. It's quite interesting.
Wait a minute. Are you softening, Joe? Are you softening on esports?
No, I'm more educated than I was on esports because I looked into it. And I thought one day, perhaps, you know, all the grumpy old men of motor racing, perhaps it's a time to go and have a look and see what this is all about. So I went to have a look and see. And I thought, okay, now I get it. And I see what's going on. I don't necessarily think I'm going to go and watch it. This guy, Brendan Lee, who seems to win everything, must be very good.
Yeah.
He must have very, very good motor skills, hand-to-eye coordination. And you can see that Mercedes had a good effect on him because he actually looks sort of young and thrusting now as opposed to a doughboy, which is how he looked at the end of last year. Have I upset anybody? Well, what the hell? But that's the truth of it. You know, he's been through physical training, mental training. He's done setup courses. He's done all kinds of stuff. And he's clearly almost unbeatable now. And it is interesting that the same team is winning all the races. And that the same people are finishing runner-up. I mean, they're not in reality, but you know, the same patterns are emerging. So the two Red Bull teams, who obviously take it quite seriously, have been the ones finishing second and third, with a Force India occasionally in there. But none of the others have even seen anywhere near the podium, if you like, or the virtual podium. Now, the thing I have a problem with, and this is a lot of people have a problem with, is virtual sport. You can't kill yourself, so you have e-courage and e-this, e-that. And I was thinking about this the other day. How do you fix that problem? And the answer is very simple. You have things that measure everything on the Formula One cars of today. Right. So if you have a big accident, they can tell you what the impact was and generally what it would have done to you if you'd been in a real car. So you can have e-injuries, can't you? Like, you're out for a month because you crashed so heavily. And then if you have crashed really heavily, you can have e-death, which means that you're not allowed to race ever again. You have to go off and do e-sports in whatever, you know, tennis.
Joe, when you mentioned this before the show, I thought you meant simulating the injury on the driver. As in, like...
No, I didn't. I meant that it's just rules, you know. But that's the that's the rules of real motorsport, you see. The rules of real motorsport, if you crash hard enough, you hurt yourself.
Jamie Ryan says, how about electric shocks?
That's a good idea. Or hit them on the head with a mallet if they crash. You know, whatever. But the fact is that if you have nine lives and just press reset every time you crash, it's not quite the same challenge, is it? Anyway, it's an interesting argument.
Okay, in the chat, Paul Van Der Paar, it basically does quotation marks. Esports doesn't have enough death. Joe Sayward 2018. That'll be the headline.
I didn't say that at all.
I think may have said exactly that, unfortunately.
No, I didn't say exactly that. You see, that is putting words into the mouth. That is what you would call fake news. What I'm saying is, here is a solution to the problem of how to give esports credibility. That's all.
I'm going to have to blow my nose. All right. Okay. You do know there's a Star Trek episode where they do exactly this. They simulate the war. And if you were deemed that you would have died in this virtual war, you had to go and report to go and be killed. So that's what I thought you were advocating originally. And I'm glad you've softened that to just like effectively being banned instead.
Well, that's what it boils down to. I wasn't suggesting that we should go and shoot people who play esports. No, that's not what I'm suggesting. Put them through minces. No, I'm not suggesting that.
I'm glad we clarified.
I'm just suggesting that, if you crash big enough, in other words, that puts a risk factor into it, you see.
We were talking about Rob Smedley, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how we got onto esports, but there you go. Rob Smedley, yeah, he's going to have some time off, I think. I haven't heard him going anywhere else. And why would anybody go to esports except for money?
It's a shame, though.
Formula E,
yeah.
Rather.
Wow.
It's just the money, I would think. But I don't think, you know, if you don't need money, why would you do it? Some people might say it's a challenge. I guess it's a bit like me looking at esports and somebody saying, well, maybe there's something in this Formula E. I'll go and have a look at the technology. That might excite some engineers.
From a personality point of view, though, Rob Smedley kind of had a place in the F1 fans' hearts that other people didn't. It was, you know, a bit more than just his roguish northern charm, wasn't it? I mean,
you're not allowed to do those regional accents. You know, you get into trouble from people.
My dad's part Grimsby, so I'll get away with it. I've got a
somebody has to be, I suppose.
I've got a northern friend. That's okay.
Okay. Oh well. Yeah. Good heavens. Well, there you are. I suppose I'll still talk to you. Maybe. Yeah. Anyway. yes, he has a roguish charm about him, doesn't he? But I don't think. Does that translate? Is he massively more popular than other engineers? Probably.
What, name your other favourite race engineer? I think the Smedley sticks out, certainly, in that category from a media point of view.
Well, I think a lot of them sound like they're talking down to the drivers in an appalling fashion. Like, you know, hello, stupid driver, don't forget to turn left at the first corner.
Yep.
have you taken the brake off? You know, these kind of things. They do treat the drivers like they are monkeys. And I think that's wrong. So Smedders, who, yeah, decent enough sort of, yeah, go stick it to him, mate. You know, that sort of stuff. That's good. You do hear that from other ones too occasionally, but they do tend to be a little bit dry and a little bit condescending, I think the word is.
But the relationship between Lewis Hamilton and his race engineer, Peter Boddington, I don't know if I keep getting that wrong, but
Bonington,
that seems perfectly balanced, where you've got, you know, a little bit of fire and a little bit of mayo there to cool the seltzer of Lewis Hamilton. Hamilton probably needs someone a bit calming.
But Lewis is pretty calm in his, he only generally gets if he doesn't understand what's happening. He asks what's going on, why is this happening? And sometimes he's absolutely right, you know, why am I not coming in now? And usually there is an explanation for it, which has been thought out many times more than people just doing it there on the spot. You know, sometimes it does make sense, although it doesn't appear to. And sometimes you take a risk. For example, on the tires in Mexico, it was, I think, where they took a risk. You know, oh no, it was Austin, wasn't it? You come in if he doesn't. Basically, the Mercedes has been struggling a little bit on the tires and in recent races. And so you take risks in the hope that things will come out in your favor. And if you're taking a risk on a tire that's not there, and in Austin, of course, you had this situation where there was no practice to actually test everything out in advance. It was more difficult to choose. So they made a call, which actually would have been quite clever if the tires had been able to do it, but the tires weren't able to do it. So, you know, it's always the way. Whatever you call, sometimes it's going to be wrong. So the strategists are just like most people, you know, the strategists are, you're on the hiding to nothing, because when things go right, you look great. When things go wrong, you look stupid.
Did you like the unpredictability brought about by having less practice time? Because obviously lots of people are there suddenly called for, right, let's get rid of all Friday practice. Or do you like the teams competing when they have honed it and they are massively prepared and they are at the top of their game?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I haven't really got an answer that I've really thought through. I don't think that you can have race meetings that are shorter than the ones we have because of the amount of money that's charged to have them. So that's one of the key points, which is, you know, if we want to go on going to places and getting paid large sums of money, you've got to have action going on for a few days. Is it good that everybody is well prepared? Probably not. It's probably better that people aren't well prepared, but, you know, you're not going to go there and have your stuff sitting in the garage all the time. So it's kind of a catch-22. I mean, I think that when you have very little preparation, of course it's going to be a little bit more random. But it's the same thing with having money. You know, the more money you have, the less random it is. And that's true in every sport. You know, if you look at it, the teams in this world where professionalism has taken over all sport and ruined all sport, to be honest, you know, it takes away a lot of the randomness of sport. With just large sums of money arriving and sports psychologists, all this stuff that comes with money. And it's all down to how important it is to win. You could argue that if you reduce the prize funds, you might get better racing.
Because they throw less at it.
It becomes less valuable. But, you know, that's really not the answer because a lot of them are there for the coverage as well. So it's hard. You know, it's a difficult one. The fact is that we don't really want to go back to being where hovercraft racing is now, do we? You know, it's where is hovercraft racing now, by the way? I once saw some hovercraft racing. It was brilliant. And I thought, why is nobody doing this on telly?
Tune in for Missed Apex review of the Hovercraft Championships Sunday, 8 p.m. live on YouTube. Click subscribe and the little bell and you'll get a notification every time we go live. Joe, the fact of being prepared is an interesting one, and it applies to journalists and podcast guests as well as to teams. If I had tipped you off for this question, you'd have had a more boring answer, but we're going to catch you on the hop now because Roseanne Hooded wants to know, in line with our big argument last night that I'm sure you tuned into, Joe, who is Joe Sayward's top five F1 drivers of all time? And you're not allowed to say it's pointless comparing between eras because we all know that, but that ruins the game.
Well, it is all of that, but it would include certainly Jim Clark. It would certainly include Fangio. Oh, I think Jim Clark without a question. I'm amazed that people don't put him in there. It's only because of ignorance, I think, more than anything else. But no, because people have heard of Fangio, and so everyone says Fangio because he's Fangio. But, you know, at the end of the day, what are the criteria for deciding? Is the most spectacular, the best driver, the most successful? It's a really difficult one. So, you know, Lewis Hamilton has got pretty much everything at the moment. He's on a high. He's driving like, in another planet to everybody else. That's great. That was like Senna used to be in his day. And it's inspiring stuff, you know. You have others who didn't live long enough to have the careers that they might have had. So it's really a difficult one. But just the numbers don't work for me. Just, you know, saying that he has X number of championships doesn't really work. No. And, you know, Stirling Moss never had any championships, which is absolutely ludicrous.
Who would you say are your top five since 1990?
Oh, God, I don't know. Top five since 1990.
And by the way, while you're thinking about that, European does point out that it's pronounced Jim Clare.
It's not pronounced Jim Clare. It's Jim Clark, actually, but there you are. Since 1990, when you've got to have Lewis, you've got to have Senna. By 1990, Prost was past his best, so I wouldn't include him.
Good point.
1990.
Alonso?
Yes, Alonso, very, very good. Self-defeating, however. And yes. So, you know, he had the downside, which we've discussed on occasion. Vettel, a little bit the same, but he's been, you know, he very much, as a younger man, he was much more sort of balanced, I think. I think you have to have, whether you necessarily like it or not, you have to put Schumacher in there somewhere. Although, because he was a very talented guy, although he had a lot of downsides to him as well. So, anyone else I've missed out, really? I don't think Kimi quite makes it, sadly. I'm just thinking out loud
before
all the Kimi fans write in and complain.
I put you on the spot, Joe. You're doing very well.
And, yeah, beyond that, no. Can't think of anybody else, so.
I want to wrap up this podcast because I've taken 58 minutes of your time already, but I want to ask you about one of the most interesting characters in Formula One in recent times, and that's Daniel Ricciardo. Clearly a very talented racer, has seemed to struggle a little bit against Max Verstappen, both in the political game and the on-track results game. But of late, he has displayed a few worrying signs for Daniel Ricciardo fans. That ever-present grin has been replaced with things like punching a hole in the locker room or screaming and shouting past a camera or saying that his car is cursed. Obviously that's tongue in cheek, but we have seen a real change of tone from Daniel Ricciardo at the end of this season. And interestingly for me, Horner, I don't think says anything by accident. Why did Horner reveal that he'd punched a hole in the locker room? That says to me that it sort of betrays a little bit of an underlying breakdown in that relationship.
No, I don't think that's true. I think what it does is that it reveals just how competitive Daniel Ricciardo is. And I think that sometimes when you get Smiley on the TV, you don't necessarily understand how much this guy wants to win. So, you know, he's very keen to win, but he disguises it beneath the, you know, the wisecracking big grin kind of guy. Now, right now, he's going through five kinds of beep all at the same time, and he's not having any fun. So I can see why he's getting very frustrated, and I can see why he thinks he's cursed. Maybe, who knows? He did something appalling once, and some little old lady cast a spell upon him. You know, maybe some people are just unlucky. Some people are, you know, a lot of careers have been ruined by bad luck. And a lot of careers have been made by good luck. So, you know, luck is very much a part of success. Now, Daniel has to move on. I think that's perfectly logical that he's done that, because Max is that slightly bit faster. And therefore, he needs to be somewhere else. I think his choice of going to Renault is not a bad choice. Now, we need to see Renault step up to the mark a bit more. But he is bargaining on them doing that, which is an interesting bet, because you think, well, they haven't done much in the last 4 years. But let us not forget that Renault is among the biggest car companies in the world. There are now three of them fighting for the title of being the biggest, and Renault is one of them. And therefore, in principle, they should be able to beat these flibbity-gibbet companies like Mercedes-Benz and Ferrari, who, in the scale of Renault and company, are tiny in comparison. We'll see. We'll see how, if his luck changes. We'll see. I mean, he's already been lucky in lots of ways, because he came up through the Red Bull scheme. That was luck. I mean, it was based on his talent, but it was luck. He got picked over Jean-Éric Vergne by the tiniest of margins. You know, it was a really tiny margin between the two of them. It wasn't clear-cut who was better. And so you'd say he was lucky in that respect. So, you know, there's lots of good and bad. And I think at the moment he's just having a lot of bad. But never mess with those people with black hats and a hat. Black hats, always bad. I met one of them in the supermarket the other day. It was Halloween, I think.
Well, wasn't expecting that. It's good knowledge to have. Can't unknow it. Joe Saywood, you can be found on www.motorsportweek.com/Joe Saywood. Your green notebooks are epic, Joe. They're like a mini novella.
Well, that's what it's all about. It's about taking people around the world with you and showing them the way, which is what I hope to do. And incidentally, if you do www.joeblogsf1.com, it's much better.
It
goes to the same page, yes.
Oh, right.
Joe Blogs is a great name. Come on, you must get the joke.
I get the joke. I eventually got the joke.
1G, by the way, 1G. 1G, not 2. Because otherwise you would probably end up with some plumber somewhere.
Follow Joe on Twitter at Joe Saywood, myself at Spanners Ready, and the show at Missed Apex F1. Join us for our Brazilian race review. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. It's Spanners and Joe inside F1. I mean, the unedited version is worth the price of entry for the live stream. The audio version is edited with the advisement of our lawyers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase.